Hello, everyone. So this is the final part of my sexual humble beginnings. I will tell you this. So I left off talking about me being a drag queen in the past. I was also male stripping and drag queening for all the women. So I was doing both simultaneously. I would sing, dance, ad lib. I would walk their runway and impersonate women singers. And I remember stripping. Sometimes I would drag queen first. Sometimes I would strip first. Sometimes I would strip first. Sometimes I would drag queen first. I would do drag queen strip teases and male strip teases. So it was all interchangeable. If I was a drag queen, I was also a strip. If I was a stripper, I was also a drag queen. Sometimes I did both of this simultaneously. Sometimes I did both separately. But all the women were turned on equally by the drag queening and the male stripping because they were just in their mind. They felt grateful that I was arousing them many times, many ways. So what I can tell you is that once I became more understanding of myself at such a pivotal time in my life, there were times where I would talk to women engaged in street prostitution. Now, I never paid for sex. I don't know what it's like to be paid to have sex as an adult. Was I paid to be raped as a child? Yes. Evil spirits in adult bodies would give me some of the earnings. I'm referring to traffickers. They had me as a child prostitute at that time. They had me do child pornography and they would destroy the tapes at that time. So the customers would give the traffickers most of the money and the traffickers would give me a little cut of the money. That's how I was. My rape was financed and funded at the time. Let me get to what happened to me as an adult. So I never paid for sex as an adult. I never paid for any sexual contact as a teenager. Never did that. You're wondering, but Antonio, people engaged in street prostitution, they want their earnings. That is true, but this is the full story. When I first met them, because some of those women I was telling you about, their apartments and houses, some of them had friends, even relatives, who would engage in street prostitution as a lucrative career for their lives. So they drove me to them. It would be public parks, it would be secular establishments. Like, sometimes I would meet them at the movies, I would meet them at restaurants, I would meet them by walking on the sidewalk, I would meet them by going to their homes, because they had apartments and houses themselves. And I remember meeting them by walking on the street with the women that I was drag queening and male stripping for. So sometimes I would bump into them, sometimes I would just meet up with them, often out in public. And I remember at the time where I would talk to them and introduce myself, introduce themselves. We would exchange, conversant pleasantries. And they were the first to say, Would you like to be my favorite client? And I'm shocked, because it didn't cross my mind that I would have sex with someone who, as an adult, I would have sex with someone who does sex work for money. So I was very honest. I said, I don't have the regular money coming in to regularly pay you. I'm a college student. I live off my parents. Everything I have in terms of my clothes and my ability to go out every now and then is because of the money they put in my bank account. And I said, I don't think they would want me to take your sex work money and put in my account. And I said, I won't ever have the means to pay you fairly and pay you regularly. They laughed, smiled, and after they finished laughing, giggling, they said, you're really going to be my favorite client, because I was never going to charge you anyway. And I had this shocked look. I said, but wait a minute, I'm trying to remember what I said. Okay, I remember what I said. I said, I never knew a sex worker to not want to get compensated for relations. And they laughed and smiled again. After they finished laughing and smiling, they said, "Well, I already talked to the madams and brothel keepers and pimps, and I already heard a lot of awesome details about you based upon what a lot of ladies are saying about you." And they said, "Well, instead of you paying me, I pay you." And they said, I work jobs." And they said, "I work the kind of jobs where the law enforcement won't be on me." They said, "I tend to work jobs that most people work when I'm not doing sex work on the side." So they would give me their legal money. And I could tell it was legal money, because when they would just give me money without covering us, then that was their work money. They never gave me prostitution money. Me being in the crime world, when you see clients give those engaged in street prostitution money, they cover each other and often look around to make sure no one is suspicious. And when the coast is clear, in quotations, they quickly give each other money. They quickly take the money. So did I ever see the sex workers do that with the men clients as an adult in college? Yes, but not that often. Here, I saw it sporadically, but they really did, you know, after a while, they're like, "You know, I don't want you to see what I do with these other clients." And actually, their clients started not being around as much. You know, they're dwindling in clients because they were starting to pour more and more energy into me. So the madams fell in love. Some of the madams fell in love with me. Some of the brothel keepers fell in love with me. Some of the pimps fell in love with me. Now, it tended to be, there was very little men pimps, but the pimps were nice people. Because when they said the word pimp, I got scared, because I'm thinking to myself, oh man, these 1970s blaxploitation type pimps say it ain't so. I don't feel like having to fight off pimps like it is a child. Not again. But they reassured me, no, they don't abuse, they don't drug up, they don't cuss out, they don't even call us misogynistic slurs. They're nice people. And I breathed a sigh of relief at the time. I said, whew. And I met them, and they were nice people. They were everything that women engaged in street prostitution said. The brothel keepers were mostly women. Very little brothel keepers were men. And there were way more madams than men pimps. Most of the pimps were women. And madams, majority of them were women. So those of all three, you know, brothel keepers and pimps, the ones that were men, nice people. Most of, you know, the majority that were women, nice people. The men madams, nice people. Women madams, nice people. Because all of them understood, if we are, you know, abusive, drugged up, rapey type of, you know, sex work leaders, then Antonio's not going to be around us. And that was the truth. Because I was like, because when they said, oh, well, you know, they tell me the roles. So, brothel keeper, madam, and pimp, when they said those words, I was like, please tell me they're not the typical kinds. Because if they are, and they interject and said, not at all. Never that. I would never work for anybody that would violate anybody. So I met them, and they were all nice. Now getting back to the falling in love with me part. I remember that some of the madams left sex work. Some of the women engaged in street prostitution left sex work. Some of the brothel keepers, that women left sex work, and some of the women pimps left sex work because they really found me attractive, like romantically attractive, sexually attractive, because they liked the fact that I spoke the King's English like a college professor would. They liked the fact that I was a very soft-spoken person. They liked the fact that I had a gentle, generous spirit. They liked the fact that I was a polymath. I was the jack of all trades. I was a person that I usually didn't talk sex with them. I didn't talk romance with them, usually. Usually I would talk to them about them, their hobbies, you know, what's on their mind. And they liked the fact that I could talk about intellectual subjects and even controversial subjects in such mesmerizing ways and, you know, well, and they liked that I was well-balanced in conversation, and they liked that I was a healthy encourager, and they liked the fact that I was calm, cool, and collected. They liked the fact that I was into chivalry and gentlemanliness and Southern hospitality. Those were the parts they really found attractive. And so some of them were like, okay, some stayed in the sex work world, the women, and some left. And so they were like, well, we're all having the same feelings for Antonio, so let's just all share him. And that's what they did. So I was sleeping with all of them and lovey-dovey with all of them too, because in their mind I found the gentleman of my dreams. So they would work jobs and didn't do sex work anymore after that. Now the ones that stayed, they stayed because they were in dire situations economically. They came from poverty-stricken families. Some stayed because they love doing sex work, and some stayed because of a mixture of love doing sex work and feeling like they need economic support. So the ones that stayed, from what I remember, what they did was say, you know, I was the only client they never charged. And I'm just telling you what I remember, because not all sex work worlds are the same. Sex work is not the same everywhere you go. It can be different and drastically different depending upon areas. Every sex work world, whether it's America or outside of America, has their own culture. So what you see in the movies, that's not true everywhere you go. Some sex workers, if they really, really like you like that, like if you're somebody that they really appreciate, they might give you discounts or for free. In my case, because they said the reason why they never charged me, I never paid discounts, always free, because they're in their mind, Antonio knows how to make a woman feel like a brand new woman, like a natural woman, a brand natural woman. And then Antonio knows RESPCT, find out what it means to me. And he takes care of PCT. That's what they said about me. Plus, they're like, you know, he's so sweet. I don't want to. And he's already getting his degree. He's working hard in school. I don't want to stress him out with trying to, you know, balance his studies and always worrying about coughing up the money to us. That's why they're like, you know what? Let's just pay him. And that's what happened. I didn't ask them to pay me. They already had in their hearts to pay me legal money from their jobs, not the sex work one, as well as have free sex with me. They already agreed on that before I even met them, because other women would tell them, you know, Antonio is of chivalry, he's a gentleman, Antonio's a sensitive lover, you know, Antonio is a, he's also a protector. And the women were telling these sex workers, and don't get me wrong, when it comes to sex, Antonio's the greatest of all time. He's the greatest in the history of all histories. And so what the sex workers told me is that, based upon those compliments, that the madams, the brothel keepers, and the pimps, and those engaged in street prostitution, meaning the adults, in this case women, they all got together and said, well, he will never be charged financially. We will use our legal money to pay him, because we love that he is furthering his beautiful education, and, you know, whatever he sexually wants to do, that's what we're gonna do. And they said, even if we have, maybe we have some sexual positions, sexual acts we may not like, when it comes to Antonio, we're going to learn to like those sex positions and sex acts. So they said, well, yeah, let's help him out financially, and let's make also his sexual dreams realized as well. We're helping him with his non-sexual dreams, you know, the college part, so he can grow up to be the excellent Antonio, we already know. But let's also make it clear that he can have all the sex he wants with us as often as he wants it, as many times as he wants it. He gets to decide the locations, the times, the weekdays, the weeknights. Whether there's condoms or not. If he wants an orgy, we'll give him one. If he wants an individual, give him one. If he wants to switch it up sometimes, we'll be okay with that. Whatever he sexually wants to do, that's what we're gonna do. So that's what happened. Everything I said really happened in real life. So it depended on what sexual mood I was in. If I was in the mood for orgy, they all would have one with me. If I was in the mood for individual sex, I would have sex with them one at a time. Or, you know, I would pick the locations. I was like, well, I can't have you in my dorm, but we'll go to your home. And they're like, well, he wants to go to your home. That's it. Don't argue with him. Don't debate. Just do what he says. And that's what happened. I go to their homes because I did public sex, but I was like, okay, I don't know how often I can have public sex without getting caught, because I never got caught, and the women I was with never got caught either. So we would go to their place, and that's where the sex would commence. And I remember you know, when it came to what happened at the time, I would, they would supply, they use female condoms, and I would just have sex with them, like, well, because they were like, well, I'll put the condom on. I don't want you to always put the condom on. So they would put the condom on. Other times, they would take HPV, PrEP, and PEP. And they'll say, well, I'm well protected, so we would have sex under those circumstances. You know, there were times where I did originally would put a condom on, and that would be sex. And other times, they were able to secure me to take PrEP, PEP, and HPV. How were they able to secure it? Because, you know, like, I have medical permission. They gave me one of their male's best friend's medication, because he was taking those things. He was sexually active too, so I would take it sometimes, and I turned out fine. I didn't get super sick. No migraine. I was I think the reason why I was able to be fine because my body was so used to being sexually active and protecting itself sexually that when it was in my bloodstream and, you know, my body could just handle it. I didn't take HPV and PrEP all the time, but on a few occasions I did at the time. I was just so glad to sexually protect myself subconsciously, so that's what happened. And then I remember being in that kind of world where the sex workers would pay me a little bit more, sometimes a lot more, when I would drag queening for them and male stripping for them. And you're probably wondering, why did I say all these things out loud? Well, because I have nothing to hide and I have no shame. I'm not saying all these things so other people can follow my example. That's not the intent. That's not even the point. The point is that I'm educating people about what is it like to go about sex if you're on the autism spectrum. Not every person on the autism spectrum has my sexual past, of course. I'm also talking about what it's like to have sex and be a black person. Not every black person has my sexual past, though. I'm talking about what it's like to have sex as an abuse survivor. Not every abuse survivor has my sexual past, though. I'm talking about what it's like to have sex and be, you know, heteroflexible. And not every heteroflexible person has my sexual past, though. I get that. What I do feel is this. I talk about what it's like to have sex after you've been raped. Not every rape survivor has my sexual past. I understand. But these are the kind of things that people would want to sweep under the rug, and I just choose not to. That is not the kind of heart that I have anyway. When I think about what I've encountered in life, I think about the fact that sex for me at that time, to some extent, was a chore. And you know that because of the trauma, sex at times was a bore that wasn't always fun because of the trauma. Sex was a clutch and a crutch because of the trauma. So I didn't always understand myself sexually. Sometimes women would count how many sex partners I had. Even though I told them I'm not a fan of body count, because I feel that that is sickening and saddening to do. But they did so anyway because they were so in awe of a good man, a chivalrous gentleman. Having his lady loves, as they said. They're like, we don't count. We don't body count male pigs when it comes to sex partners. But we make an exception for you because I think it is so awesome that a Southern hospitality type of man is the good kind of Casanova, the kind of Casanova that women can actually respect. We don't mind you being Casanova, Antonio, because you actually revere women. You honor women. You value women. You cherish women. You appreciate women. You love women. You like women. You respect women. You treat women well. So, you know, they were like, we like, as they called it, chivalrous womanizing. They were like, they called it serial chivalrous womanizing. They called it, Antonio's a gentlemanly woman, as they like that. They're like, nothing wrong with having a lot of women as long as you don't treat them as mud to smear off from your shoe. So after a while, I gave up trying to convince them that the concept of body count is nauseating and off-putting and tacky. They refuse to change their minds on that, so I just stopped telling them to not body count anymore. One day they said, and I am not making this up, they may have been exaggerating, I don't know, but they said, Antonio, you have been with more women than the 20,000 that Wilt Chamberlain claimed. That's what they said. I never body counted. Ever. It was never something that I cared about. You know, people that knew I was sexually active, because I was never a braggart. I was never a sexual braggart. But the women I was with, when women talk to other women, Sometimes other men are going to find out. So that's how people know I was sexually active. Is they weren't the type to be quiet. The men weren't either. Men would talk to other men. Men would talk to women. Women would talk to women. Women would talk to men about me and my proud, my gentlemanly prowess with women and my sexual prowess with women. Now, they said, they described sex. The women said I had sexual prowess. And the women said I had gentlemanly prowess. I had chivalrous prowess with women. They said all these types of prowesses with women. That's what they said. And they were body count for me. And I didn't want anybody to body count for me because I don't even body count for me. But they did. And they said, you exceed the 20,000 Wilt was with. I don't know my true number. I don't care to know. I don't even want to know. Just know that the number is innumerable. Numberless, countless, uncountable. Too many women to be counted. I just leave it at that. But, I'm not a fan of sexual quantity. I value sexual quality. But I'll say this. When I, when I talk about my life, especially sexually, at the time I have felt a sense of being sexually delirious at the time. And what I mean by that is that I was behaving the way I was behaving sexually because the organized crime world of my mother's brother taught me that I had to have sex like there was no tomorrow. I had to be with a new woman each and every time. I had to have new women every time too, and that if I didn't, then somehow I was worthy of being quote unquote emasculated, and that my gender and my manhood would be scrutinized, and that somehow I was a soft punk instead of a real rugged, raw man. Those are the messages of pure evil I got from organized crime and mother's brother. When I look at my life at that time, some of the women did count the very small amount of men I slept with. I slept with the men because I had daddy issues with my earthly father. But more importantly, I had daddy issues with God, who I saw as my heavenly father at the time. I had sex with the women because I had mommy issues with my biological mother. One reason why I was having sex was I was grieving the loss of my grandma Claire, who's always been the best mother in the world to me. And so there were mommy issues when it came to my grandma Clara and her earthly departure. And I had mommy issues with God more than anybody else when it came to mommy issues. So that's why what happened happened. So I naturally support sex workers' rights because by nature I'm a human rights for all, civil and political rights for all, and economic and social and cultural rights for all kind of person. I'm also the Declaration of Sexual Rights, Declaration of Sexual Pleasure, Right to Sexuality, H.J. Carter Principle. Sex positivity type of person by nature. I then noticed. What I mean by what I learned is this, that I was never a person that enjoyed grading women. I saw a lot of that in the crime world. It could be sexually, it could be women's body types. When I became an adult, undergraduate, when I was involved with women sexually, as well as erotically, sensually, what have you, especially in the sex work world, I do remember times where the women sex workers would grade themselves sexually in terms of body types, and I convinced them to in kind manners to stop doing that, because I told them it makes the sex impossible to be enjoyable when you're doing that. And I told them that I have sex with you because of who you are. Your looks are just a pleasant bonus. So that cheered them up. I said, you know, you're already perfect to me. So whatever we say and do sexually is going to be perfect. And you look perfect to me, so you being naked, all it does is excite my entire soul. I remember saying that to them. Because in the sex work world that they were in particular, they were used to dealing with male pigs who made them feel sexually self-conscious and, you know, bodily self-conscious all the time. because the male clients would grade them sexually and body types. I'm talking about the same kind of grades that exist in educational facilities. And I remember convincing them that, you know, you should stop having sex with those men and stop accepting their money. And I said, if any man is going to be a client, has to be a decent, Prince Charming. Not charming you for all the wrong reasons, for all the right reasons. And their male clientele went down significantly. So the ones that stayed in the sexual world, they were with other men, but they would see those men on occasion because they were like, well, I really like being with you. And yeah, my economic situation, not that great, but ever since I met you, I have a hard time being with other clients because men like you are rare. Rarities, even. So they had clients they would see on occasion, but for the most part, it was just myself and the women sex workers. Now, I wasn't trying to make it that way. I just told them in terms of men, you know, the ones that are respectable and respectful, those the ones you spend your priceless time with, and the ones that are disrespectful and disrespectable, those are the ones to proudly shy away from. But they really couldn't find a lot of guys like me. So they went from having a lot of male clients to a handful, but they would see the handful every now and then. But after a while, it became just me and no one else. This was towards the end of my time at Beacon College as undergraduate. I remember when it came to sex and body type myself, I remember the women sex workers. They said to me, Antonio, never forget how much of a rare breed you are. Never doubt that, never question that. You being a rare breed means that there's a lot of women that can't help but to wanna make babies with you. There's a lot of women that cannot help but to wanna marry you. There's a lot of women that cannot help but to wanna date you. There's a lot of women that can't help but wanna have sex with you because you have this, like, some of them have vocabulary words because we used to share vocabulary words with each other, me and some of the women sex workers. Some of them are intellectuals too, so they're like, you have this vivacious excellency. They said, Antonio, don't be surprised by the time you're 40 that you're already a biological father. Don't be surprised by the time you're 40 that you have a wife. And don't be surprised by the time you're 40 that there'll be other women who won't allow you to be single for the rest of your life. don't be surprised if there'll be a lot of women who will keep you from being child-free the rest of your life. There'll be some women that want to pet on with you. And when they said that, I expressed my gratefulness for what they said. And that statement has me thinking more and more about my future, because I've had to be real with myself and say, self, I'm a rare breed kind of man, which means that being child-free is not completely easy. Being single is not completely easy. Living as a pet-free person is not completely easy. And being the type of person that's living my own, that's not completely easy, because I said, self, the kind of person that you are, women just gravitate towards you. Because of who and what you are. And I said, I understand that not all women are attracted to me. I'm no longer bothered by it. I used to be. But a lot of women are attracted to me. So therefore, you know, there's more evolution of my cranium and my psyche as a result. So there were women who used to tell me these things all the time. The women sex workers I was sleeping with, the brothel keepers who were women, the madams were women, the pimps were women. And pretty much every woman I've ever slept with told me exactly what the women sex workers were saying. And I remember that when it came to when I first started having sex as an adult, I used to grade myself on my body type sexually. And there were women who said, Antonio, you break my scales when it comes to sex. 1 through 10, 10 is an understatement. And affinity is an understatement too. And they said, in terms of looks, affinity's understatement on your looks too. So I remember looking back at that time in my life and just really understanding that, don't get me wrong, the men that I slept with a handful, they said I broke their scales in terms of sex and looks as well. And they told me that I would make an excellent husband, excellent father, an excellent pet owner, that type of thing. They told me the same things the women told me. How did I meet the men? Women would introduce me to these men. The women I knew introduced me to these men. it was like they were the friends of the women. That's how that happened. Where I would be with the men sexually, well, at their places of residences, but and we use male birth control between each other, by the way, and lubrication as well. But let me get back to what I'm saying in closing. I'm trying to make sure I explain all my sexual past, because I'm not doing an episode on this because I'm making sure when it comes to my sexual past, I've said everything. Nothing left unsaid. Everything has been said. So let me really think through it. Last thing I can say is, was that, I just remember hanging out with all the women. The ones who were sex workers, the ones who weren't. And they would give me sexual compliments and non-sexual compliments. They would charge at me and jump my bones on the spot sometimes. The men too. The men would give me sexual compliments, non-sexual compliments too. So I just remember at the time, last memory I have, because after this everything has been officially aired out, the last memory I have is overall I was, in their minds, I was the kind of woman I said that. When they described me as that way, none of the women were offended. They were like, well, you know, if you are what women aren't used to, of course ladies can get naked for you. So, like, you know, that was how they felt about me. They're like, well, I actually like that Antonio's not monogamous because... And so a lot of women said, because I just couldn't leave him alone if he was monogamous. Because it's like, I want him and I need him, and there's a lot of women that need and want Antonio, so for him to be non-monogamous, it means we all get to bond over him. So that's what it was like at that time. And I used to get a lot of guys at Beacon College who would high-five me and hug me because of my womanizing and compliment me on it. And the women at the school, Beacon College, and some of the staff members also would pick me up because of the womanizing I was doing. And in closing, I'll say this. That at the time I was doing a lot of touch experimentation, taste experimentation, smell experimentation, sight experimentation, and hearing experimentation. I was also doing experimentation of the body, experimentation of the heart, experimentation of the soul, experimentation of the mind, experimentation of the memories at the time. And in closing, it was I now experience sexual inner peace and sexual world peace. All the stories and all the experiences of my sexual past have been officially been told. When it comes to my sexual past, I can confirm and affirm that there's nothing left unsaid.